marching at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Hey there, happy Friday. This is Pamela Santos. I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm Cheryl Green, your other host tonight.
And you're listening to Bread and Roses, the longest running feminist program in the country. And we say that all the time.
Because it's still true.
Because it's still true and it's going to keep being true. So, and we're going to talk a little bit more, but honestly, we just have such a packed schedule for this show that we're just going to get right into the show that we have. So we have a couple of people in studio with us live here at KBOO, and later on, we're going to be talking on the phone with our featured guest, Elaine, and I'm so sorry, Elaine, if you're listening to this right now. I'm pretty sure I practiced this like several times beforehand. It's Elaine Dulalas. My gracious. I hope I got that one. And Elaine is one of the co-hosts of This Filipino American Life, a podcast that was just recently started last year, and also the creator of an upcoming documentary, all around artist, I'd like to say, writer. So that's going to be coming up later on in tonight's program. But before we get to that, we're going to be covering a little bit of what's going on in current events, local stuff right here in Portland. And for that, we have special guests from the representatives of the Gabriella Portland chapter. And I'll let y'all introduce yourselves. Who's here?
Hi, I'm Alaris Villegas.
And I'm Veronica Porter.
And I'm so glad that you can make it to KBOO.
Thank you so much for having us. First off, I just want to give out a shout out to the Panayas listening, the 0.05%. So really why I'm here is to prop the iChirp International Coalition of Human Rights in the Philippines Peace Tour. So we have a Portland leg coming up. Our delegates, we have three delegates arriving from the Philippines. We'll be in Portland May 1st and May 2nd. So our delegates are a lesbian activist who organizes around human rights violations and really promotes the assertion of people's rights. We also have a LUMOD leader. So LUMOD stands for the Indigenous People of Mindanao. Mindanao is the southernmost island of the Philippines, and he really organizes around Indigenous sovereignty and Indigenous rights, talking more about like the militarization of Indigenous communities, foreign multinational corporations, mining and logging practices, and really the Save Our Schools program. And then we also have a United Methodist Church minister coming. And I think like what that shows is just that the National Democratic Movement, which is what Gabriella Portland is a part of, is that we can organize everyone. We have a place for everyone in our movement, from professionals to students, to workers, to the youth, to the church sector. We have a place for you. So we'd really like to talk more about the peace tour, the peace process, and give you some more details about our specific events.
That sounds so great. And where I just want to unpack all of this, so we're going to rewind. And just for everyone at home, before we wrap up, we'll definitely give the event details one more time and the website, which is going to have all this information as well. So don't you worry if you wanted to get that, we're definitely going to repeat that information at the end too. So let's rewind. Just so that we get everybody on the same page, if you didn't know by my last name, I am also Filipino.
What? Panay Pride.
There needs to be, it's going to be a lot of Panay Pride tonight. It's going to be a lot of just, you know, I mostly think every time I say, you know, oh, I'm Filipino, I should hear like, hey, come on.
But try it.
I'm Filipino.
Hey!
And, man, the energy. Woo. I'm going to match everybody's energies pretty soon. So, I have some knowledge, and we're going to try to get people who might not have that knowledge about what's going on in the Philippines right now. Right now in the Philippines, people might not know. I mean, the fact that you're calling it, it's called Peace Talks. Mm-hmm. What is going on that we may not be aware of?
Right. So when we think about peace, I think the first thing we think about is war, right? Mm-hmm. So folks may not know this, but we have a civil war happening in the Philippines. It's been going on for decades. It started really in 1968. So what the peace talks is about is it's bringing together the government of the Republic of the Philippines, the GRP, and the National Democratic Front of the Philippines, the NDFP. So they're two recognized governments by the Geneva Convention, and they are agreeing on pro-people legislation and reforms. And so the peace talks is really these two governments coming together, addressing the roots of the armed conflict. And really at the heart of the peace talks is a document called CASER. It's the Comprehensive Agreement for Social and Economic Reforms. Because one of the main issues in the Philippines is landlessness and joblessness. And so at the CASER really speaks to genuine agrarian reform and national industrialization. So kind of going more in depth about that, the class structure of the Philippines is that we have 75% landless peasants. So that means that people who are tilling the land, performing backbreaking agricultural labor, don't actually own the land. We have landlords in the Philippines. And so they actually don't have enough money to like purchase the crops that they're producing, right? So when we talk about genuine agrarian reform, we're talking about the redistribution of land to our farmers, to the people who actually are growing our crops. And considering that that's 75% of Philippine society, that's a huge amount. And then the other piece is national industrialization. I think when we take a look at Philippine history, we can see how foreign trade agreements aren't benefiting the people there in terms of how the Philippines is export-oriented and import-dependent, right? And like a good example that I just learned about recently is Pandesal. You know about Pandesal, right, Pamela?
Yep, I know about Pandesal.
Yeah, so that's like a Filipino bread that's traditionally eaten at breakfast with coffee.
It's first breakfast, first.
Yeah.
We're not hobbits, but we have first and second. A couple of them. And I know that for us, Pandesal is made with flour that is
not native
to
the Philippines. So why is that? Why is it such a part of our culture now? It's because in the 1900s, when we were a colony of America, the price of wheat was actually cheaper than the price of rice. So we can still see how these like trade agreements, even in like the export of our people, I think this is another thing people don't know, is that in the Philippines, on average, 6,000 people migrate from the Philippines every day, and 70% of whom are women who go into domestic work. So we can see the economic situation of the country, how we're lacking national industrialization, national industrialization in terms of our jobs, because we have a lot of contractual workers, so they don't have like benefits. They could be fired at any time, right? So we're really working on social and economic reforms through the peace talks, through the two recognized governments, in order to create more pro-people government policies and really try and get it to where like our people live well and full, meaningful lives. Our families are able to stay in our homeland. Children are able to grow up with their mothers. And like our future generations can have a just and lasting peace in the Philippines and don't have to be affected by the civil war that's been raging for decades.
So because not everyone on the air right now knows that I am very into food. I mean, is there a word for just into food the way I'm into food? I don't know, Cheryl.
You can make Pamela into a verb, like you're Pamela-ing.
I'm getting there, right? Like, because I refuse to say foodie. So I happen to also know about bandesal because it's my favorite, one of my favorite carbs, specifically. You can get bandesal here, by the way.
Yeah, fresh bandesal in St. Pinoy Barbara. Bakery. Mm-hmm.
Pinoy Bakery.
They're so dope.
I think I'm actually going to get the address right because I memorized it so much. 1933 Southwest 6th Avenue. So it's in Southwest Portland. And one fun fact about, it's not so fun considering what we're talking about, but bandesal, there's such a history of bandesal. Like, we consider it such a staple in our diet now and what we consider our culture too. So this is cultural practice. Food is cultural, is culture and history. And, there were roots of that, of having, when we were a Spanish colony, you had people that were used to, like, this is what I have bread. And they melded kind of recipes. But there wasn't I would say you're so on point with bringing up the relationship back to the United States, because it's, how did it still continue? You know, like, I know they were eating bread, you know, back then, like, in the plantations. It was also, like, everything changed, like, the sheer amount of grain that was coming in. And I also heard the grain also primarily comes from Pacific Northwest.
That's right. Yeah, the wheat comes from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, so there's still this relationship up to now. Mm-hmm. And being a territory, being U.S. territory at the time, then all of the different ways of, like, we're going to make this food this way instead of in the oven on whatever, on the ground, in the kitchen. They did all of those things. So, I mean, all of that came together to, but it starts with making it affordable to send that over, right? That's
right.
The point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, what I thought of when you're talking about is, like, yeah, we were a colony of the United States, and I think that's also a piece of history that people don't know, that we were from 1898 to 1946 a colony of the U.S. And so sometimes you'll hear,
like, double colonization,
because we were a colony of the Spain. Spanish first, right, for 333 years. So sometimes in our work we talk about the Philippines as semi-colonial, because we're, like, free on paper, but through, like, these economic neoliberal trade policies that are still affecting our culture, right? Cultural imperialism is also very high in the Philippines too. We can see that we're not really free. The Filipino people aren't really free from the interests of imperialism. And so that's why, like, we really encourage you to come out to our events this weekend, because we want to really build a united anti-imperialist front here. And we do a lot of solidarity work, particularly with the All African People's Revolutionary Party and the Brown Berets. And so I think, like, with this heightening political climate under the Trump presidency, people are looking for ways to plug in. People are looking for, like, how they can really show, like, their solidarity and their allyship, right? And I think coming to our events, getting to know our organizations is one way to really, like, fight with us.
So here's what I'm used to living here in Portland is, rather than using Google, people will ask me about the Philippines.
Yeah.
And so we're going to help people this one time. You don't have to pay me. I'm just going to give you this stuff for free, everybody, on the air. So just so that we're clear about what the makeup of the Philippines, all of these things, I feel like people want to say that they know the Philippines, but so many people really don't have a reason to know our history, know our heritage, because it's not being taught in schools from a young age. All I got was Cory Aquino, one of the, and that was it. That was there. And I really do not want to keep talking about Imelda Marcos. So just so to specify it, it's more than 7,000 islands. It's there are main regions, and the indigenous Lumad people come from mainly the southern part of the Philippines. That is primarily, is it mostly Mindanao?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have indigenous peoples throughout all the islands, but the term Lumad specifically refers to the indigenous people of Mindanao.
Yes, and that's made up of more than a dozen.
It's 18 different ethno-linguistic groups.
Yes, and so it's everyone still speaking different dialects or languages still, mm-hmm. too. So there are several hundred, am I getting it right, in like languages in the Philippines. So I want to give people just a sense of just understanding about specificity, that you can't just talk about this is happening here, this is this, and this is not all of the Philippines. I know I'm going to be getting really excited about having the return of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, because I'm going to be really hopeful that people are going to start to figure out that the Philippines is not like all these other Asian countries or Southeast Asian countries, that there's a specific thing. I played the game on PC, and I'm like, oh, look, rice terraces, like here. Yeah. But they're not really giving you a sense that, you know, there's like these large metropolitan regions, there are these large old cities, there's because I also don't, I'm very conscious of the limits of how the Philippines looms in our, I think I want to say, our popular American imagination. And so when we're talking about Civil War, I want to also be specific, if you can also say like the areas that that's happening, because I also grew up where I had one time that I happened to be in the Philippines during my birthday, and I think it was like some coup in like Quezon City. It was not Quezon City, but it was like this, like Metro Manila. Mm. I remember just like, who's gonna go to my 9th birthday? Yeah. Who's coming? There's like tanks and there's stuff. So I wanna be clear on like, because the way that people are thinking about images of war, that's what American media is used to pushing out there, when you have mainstream Western media. And they're usually talking about countries, I'm going to call them brown countries.
Previously colonized,
right?
Countries.
Exactly. Yeah. And for the most part, you're seeing images like, this is getting bombed, these are getting bombed, this. So if we can just be a little bit more clear, this is taking place where?
I mean, I think the National Democratic Movement is throughout the Philippines.
Okay.
But I think in terms of militarization, that's specifically happening in Mindanao. And why is that? Mindanao has the largest number of natural resources. Mm-hmm. And so, like, sometimes you'll hear people say the Filipino people are beggars on a mountain of gold. That's because our mineral reserves alone are worth $1.4 trillion. But our Filipino people are living off of less than $1 a day, right? So I think we can really see, like, the militarization of indigenous communities because they're living on the mountains. They're living where these natural resources are. And foreign multinational corporations want to come in, want to kick people off of their land, indigenous communities off of their land, in order to grab those resources to build their country's economic wealth and not give anything back to the people. Things have been happening for a long time, and those aren't the only extrajudicial killings that are happening. When we look at 400 political prisoners in the Philippines, we can talk about government repression. What else?
I mean, I think just to wrap up where we're at with things is just to be able to give people a sense of, this is not usually covered in Western media. And so we're not seeing it on CNN constantly. We're only seeing what is making the most sensationalist news. And when it usually happens, I think I'm seeing it as, look at these people suffering. So there's a specific kind of sensationalization of trauma and pain. And so whatever can get more clicks, more views, all of those kinds of things, then you get a sense of this is really something that people have to actually make a concerted effort to, and when I say people, if people wanted to know more about what's actually going on in the Philippines, usually you actually have to know which media sources to go to. And so we're going to get into more of the kind of like educational part of this. We're going to talk about where people can go to specifically know about the peace tour and about Gabriella Portland. But also before even that, I also feel like people don't know where to go to even just know more about what's going on in the Philippines. So if you, off the top of my head, I can think of like media sites like The Rappler. So RAPPLER.PH, I think. Do you have any other suggestions for where people can get more aware of the issues that are going on, especially the bullet points you were talking about in the agenda.
Mm. Yeah, I would definitely say DAVAO Today.
Okay.
Can be a good source.
Can you spell that?
DAVAOTODAY. And then also, like, we have a lot of information on the Just Peace PH website. So that's JustPeace.ph. So that'll speak more to the Just Peace platform. And then we have International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines, ICHRP. That's www.humanrighteousphilippines.net.
I am so grateful to you for spelling that out, just because there's, you know, there's double P's in here. There's the, you know, people don't remember which, where's the H, whatever. It's fine. And especially just one more time, I promise everyone we're going to run through that event detail again. Veronica, do you have that too?
Yes. So on May 1st, we're kicking off the peace tour with the May Day pre-rally, Rise Up, Resist, Unite. The Towards Liberation, Rise Up and Fight Against Imperialism, Capitalism, and Colonialism. It's our contingent made up with Gabriella Portland, Anak Bayan Portland, Portland Committee for Human Rights in the Philippines, Brown Berets, the All-African People's Revolutionary Party. And so that's where we'll be starting, 12 p.m., at the First United Methodist Church in the Park Blocks. And then after the May Day rally and march, we will be linking up at SEIU Hall for the Kababayans Let's Talk, Promoting Peace and Justice in the Philippines, where we'll get to hear directly from the delegates about what's happening and the conditions and the peace talks themselves. And then the following day on May 2nd at the Vancouver First United Methodist Church, we will have Peace, Land, and Rice, a banquet for peace. And then those are the events where the delegates are in town. But the following Saturday, May 6th, we will also have Liberate. It's a art show with artwork from political prisoners and allies just off of North Michigan.
Sounds great. And I'm so glad that you're able to come into the studio. Thank you so much, Veronica Alaris.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much, Pamela.
Thanks. And so before we get too far in there, we're going to play just a little bit just of what we're going to have coming up is we're going to talk directly with Elaine DeLolas and from this Filipino-American life. Don't be worried. You are not tuning into a different show. We're just letting you know what her show sounds like coming up. So that's coming up right now.
Welcome to this.
So much for coming back. You're listening to Bread and Roses. What we're having coming up right now, I am your host, Pamela Santos. We were just listening to the representatives from Gabriella Portland talking about their upcoming event. And we have coming up right now, we're going to have Elaine pretty soon on pretty much coming up soon right now. And Elaine, are you there?
Yep.
Yes. Okay, good. Okay, great, 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 great. And before I was trying to do this when we could hear everything coming in, just so that I made sure that Elaine is on there. Bread and Roses is a collective of women and non-binary radio activists who give voice to those in global and local spaces working for social justice and equity, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun, too. We want our bread and roses, too. Get it? So,
got it.
Yeah. Okay. And it's always interesting to have to read out somebody's bio in front of them. So you're going to have that very awkward experience right now. That's what we're going to do for you. So I feel really terrible. Before I even start, I kept listening to your last name, and I have not, I don't think I've been saying it right. Delolas?
Delolas.
Delolas. I knew it. I knew. Okay, so we have Elaine Delolas. Yes. writer behind Oblivious, Nerd Girl, Hood Chronicles, and co-host of This Filipino American Life, the theme song, which you only heard just a little bit of it. Elaine is a historic Filipino town-based writer, podcaster, and independent curator. That's Los Angeles for you, right? Yeah. She curates Color Your Troubles Away, an arts event that offers stress relief, healing, and meditation through coloring. Elaine is happily trying to figure out the secret of life through writing, volunteering, and most importantly, avoiding cleaning her room, much to her husband, T-File producer Mike's chagrin. You can find her projects, and we'll talk all about that later on. But they are pretty much, you know, you're kind of an open book online, huh, Elaine?
I pretty much am. I put everything out there. much to my, probably my parents and family's chagrin, but it's fine.
One of the things I knew that I wanted to get on the air first is just letting people know how this Filipino American Life came to be.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I'm so honored. This Filipino American Life started as the brainchild from Joe Bernardo. He was the little snippet that you heard. He had this idea that's pseudo-inspired by Racist Sandwich, the podcast that's based out in Portland.
Friend of the show! Friend of the show! Yay!
That's so cool. He had heard the episode about History on a Plate. Talking about Filipino food, which is one of our like favorite subjects. We talk about food almost in every episode. And so he was like, I want to do something similar. And he had Ryan on board already. They had been coworkers. And then he invited me because I had had two short-lived podcasts of my own that I just couldn't sustain because it was solo. It was just me.
Oh, I'm so excited. I want to talk about those projects because I kind of hope you can resurrect them too. So definitely we're putting a bookmark. We're going to talk about those projects as well.
Yeah. And so I had the pseudo know-how of doing podcasting. And because Mike, my husband and producer of the show, had all this equipment to begin with, it kind of was just, it worked out because Joe wanted to do a project and we had the resources. So we combined like Captain Planet and formed the T-Fowl crew. And it is what it is today.
And with that, I mean, I love listening to kind of the progression of how the podcast has been going. How many episodes are you at right now?
So our numbering is weird.
Don't worry about it. I actually saw the point fives in there.
Yeah. 11.5. So we actually have put out 25 episodes. So we have a combination of longer episodes, like those are full episodes, and then we have mini episodes. So our full episodes are like an hour and a half. Sometimes they're a little longer because it's long-form conversations. And then our mini episodes, which typically may not have a guest, those run up to like 30 to 45 minutes. And then we do some bonus content here and there if they don't fit into like a traditional podcast format for us.
And just to, I mean, I love the cleverness of having, you know, This American Life just be This Filipino American Life.
Yes, and I hope Ira Glass is also impressed and does not say anything about the name.
I'm pretty sure this is how many years, and he's not going to come knocking at y'all's door for this.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
It's like, I don't really think it's a confusion between brands at this point. But again, exactly. I'm not a lawyer.
True, but this is why we have Leanne Fajardo as our legal advisor. It's a labor of love. Leanne is Joe's really best friend. And then our graphic designer is Vincent Collier, my cousin. And then the person who did our intro music was a good friend of Joe's from grad school. So it's all hands on deck when we put this show together.
I don't think we got to hear the beginning of it. It's not only just that music, but it's that there's a line in there we didn't get to play.
I can... Let's see if I know it from memory. I can just pull it.
I was hoping you would, because I want to hear it, like, how you do it. It's kind of fun.
It's This Filipino American Life is a podcast that explores the nuanced experiences of Filipinos in the United States at IBABA.
Yes. And can you translate IBABA for everybody?
So this is the thing that Joe picked up on. So at IBABA, ATBP is like, it's like an acronym that gets put on Filipino businesses. It's almost like saying Tuloy po ako, like it's like telling you that they're Filipino.
Oh, so here's the interesting thing. I feel like this is also in that same vein. Filipinos don't care about spelling rules. I just feel like in terms of just how we just put, okay, it's not, you know, iba is one is IBA, like ba, you have PA, but it's like, oh no, we're gonna just shorten it, and you just need to know.
Yeah, because I didn't know either. That was something that Joe actually had to teach me, because I was like, what's ATBP? What does that mean? And then he explained it to me. I'm like, oh, I get it. That makes sense. And then I kind of had to go into my own, like, memories of seeing Filipino businesses. And I think I remember seeing that listing, like, in the phone book, in the newspaper. Like, you know, back in the days when you had to look up things.
In paper, in things in your hand that was not an electronic device. Yeah.
Correct.
I think I'm getting all the trivia now. We got all the trivia today. I came to, you know, to know your show because one of my good friends had shared, it wasn't your first episode, so your first episode definitely was just starting out, and you also had another episode early on about Filipino parents, but this was the episode on Filipino American gangs in Southern California.
That's our most popular episode. I think it has over 10,000 listens. We like to laugh that Filipino American gangsters really love listening about themselves. a joke for all of us. And it's random because, like, we'll be at events and that's the episode people will talk to us about. They'll be like, oh, yeah, I love that episode. I totally heard that. I'm like, wow, that's of all the episodes. Okay. But for us in Southern California, it was simply like a way of life to have that experience. And to have somebody who could speak on it with a level of expertise was really, it was eye-opening because I myself don't represent that lifestyle. And so to hear it from him was great.
Yeah. And that was Dave, right?
Correct. Dave.
Yeah. But what I liked about, I think the majority of some of the episodes that you do really do start out very lighthearted. And when I say lighthearted, meaning like in terms of the energy, just being very congenial starting out. But I liked that this particular episode just went kind of, it was sort of a cold open into someone's personal, not exactly narrative, but pretty much just setting the stage for like what you're going to hear and saying like, this is how this was normalized. This is how I grew up. And I really like that, you know, approach to things. I didn't warn listeners, but I told you, Elaine, that we're going to talk shop and kind of bring people in sometimes with when we get to talking and nerding out about podcasts and kind of doing radio. It's all very common territory. And so did you, like, in the coming together of that episode, was that also something, you know, like you made it a point, like, okay, we're going to really give this a lot of weight and really unpack this a lot coming into it?
So this is going to be a bit behind the scenes for how we run the show. So when we have our main episodes with a specific topic and a guest, we'll create an outline with like specific questions, and there'll be questions for us, and us meaning the host, so me, Ryan, Joe, and Mike. We usually want Mike to give his input, even though he'd rather not. He wants to be like
the Mike is the producer.
Producer Mike, yeah. And so that way it gives the audience like where we're coming from. And then there's questions for the guests that we all take a look at and we all go from there. And our topics range from Filipino-American gangs to Filipino-Americans and mental health. Our first episode was about Terrence. That was one that you were talking about. And then we talked about food with Sarah and Pablo from Filipino Kitchen. And it just, when we have guests, we really try to prepare and like, so that we're not just like, we try to have like a, it sounds like a regular flow conversation, but we really are curious and we like to get to know like the reasons behind these phenomenons or these topics.
And the nicest thing about all of this, I really do hear that labor of love, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
And Cheryl wanted to even ask more about that in that vein of labor of love.
I did. You talked about the episode, the one y'all were just talking about as being the most popular one and the one that everybody else is always bringing up. And I'm just curious, which is your favorite episode?
Oh, which is my favorite episode? It's so... I have a really poor memory, so it's usually the last one. It's like whatever's the last one. I like when we have like carryover comedic notes and tags and bits. So early on, there was like an election episode or politics episode where Joe relayed the story about his experience in local politics and how he was phone banking and how he called a woman and asked for, like, he called somebody, asked for a specific name, and the woman answered, and she said the person's name, whoever it was, and then her response was, "He's already dead." And we cracked up because we were like, "What?" And so that line has been something that we say to each other. Like, when we talk to each other, we almost say that every other day. I think we have incorporated it in almost every episode. It's like those things that we create comedy for ourselves. And the benefit is that Joe, Ryan, and me and Mike, we're all friends. Like, we've known each other for years. Like, I've actually known Ryan since I was 17 years old. And I've known Joe for over, like, 15 years. Which means, like, I'm only 22 years old.
Of course.
Just kidding. That's not really how old I am. But so that's... The ease of the conversation really stems from the fact that we are really good friends, and I think that comes off for our audience. And I've had friends tell me, like, when they listen to the show, it just sounds like we're all hanging out and talking, and that's what it is. Like, that's the magic of the show, is like the conversations we're having. It's what we would be doing at like parties and just like hanging out and shooting the breeze and like, "Hey, what do you think of this?" And we don't get to do that often since we're older and working professionals, but now we get to do it on this podcast and let other people into the party and like into the conversation.
I think from earlier before, we started off by talking about what's going on in the Philippines and how it can be very hard to actually have really good information. I think people just play like they know something about the Philippines, and then, you know, like they hope that, you know, their bluff lasts and whatever. But I'm really interested in kind of letting people know what I think your podcast does, is letting people know that there is this, to be Filipino American. And this is just for your podcast. You don't have the dash or the slash there, but to be Filipino American, how do you think, you know, the topics or the way that you cover it in the podcast is getting that across out there?
Oh, that's a really good question.
It's a big one. I know. It's a big one.
So we all, the four of us, come from different walks of life in terms of our Filipino-American identity. So Ryan was born in the Philippines, and he immigrated when he was a child. Joe was born here in the States, but he's gone back often. Mike was born here, but he's gone back a few times. I was born here, and I have never been to the Philippines, ever. And so that's one way where we talk about where we're coming from. And we also, in almost every episode when we're talking about a subject, we acknowledge the privilege we have in being in America. We acknowledge the privilege we have in growing up in Los Angeles, or in Mike's place, in Oxnard, which is an hour west of Los Angeles. And so we emphasize that this is our experience, and we are very privileged. But there are nuances that even if you grew up in New Jersey or Chicago or San Francisco, that bind us all together. And that is unique to the Filipino-American experience. So, like, there's an episode where we talked to the author, Catherine Sunita Choi, and professor out of UC Berkeley, about her book Empire of Care, and that's about nurses.
So yes, I remember this. Universal. Yeah, yes.
And, like, folks always, they'll know a Filipino nurse in the middle of nowhere. Joe recounted a story where he was in Iowa, and he saw one Filipino nurse, and I'm like, Iowa? I did not know there are brown people there. So the fact that he found one, I was surprised. And so those will be universal in terms of, like, our conversations. And I think that's why Filipino Americans relate to us. And also our audience seems to be international. So I feel like wherever there are Filipinos, they want to hear these stories. So folks in the Philippines or folks in Australia or people in Dubai or even in London, like, they want to hear the stories, because it's just like we're always so hungry and so starved for some kind of representation that's beyond, you know, the things that you see, like, on America's Best Dance Crew or on, you know, the Voice or British Got Talent, you know, all of those things. If that makes any sense.
And a lot of the times, I always feel like you need to have a Filipino, and we were talking about this interchangeably. We say Filipino because it's not really in our just common use to say Filipino American. But you need to have another Filipino in the vicinity to point out when something Filipino is happening. Like, it's the best. Like, oh, like, you're gonna know that there is a Filipino singer. Who is it? Jessica something on
Jessica Sanchez.
Thank you on American Idol.
On American Idol, because Ryan had a crush on her. So I think that's something we've said on the podcast. I hope it is.
I'm remembering her being very young, but anyway. And I think anytime somebody was doing, you know, the groups on the dance shows, no, I'm not even going to say one, yeah, because they're on all of them.
They're on all of them. And even my cousin Charles is actually in one of those shows. So it's like,
which one?
It was on America's Got Talent. He's a part of the dance crew Six Step. And that it wasn't on MTV or anything, but people on that dance crew, Six Step, were in Choreotic Fleeter On, and so they won America's Best Dance Crew a year or two later.
And that's the thing that I love, again, about the way that you're able to talk about it. You know, definitely it's going to help to know, it's very, you're just going to talk about it kind of like, without over-explaining, well, in case you didn't know this, if you're not Filipino, you just kind of talk about it and you're centering, I would say, like, on being Filipino first and then having people kind of just, like, catch up to that after.
Yeah, I think it's the nature of having four Filipino-Americans or five, if you have a guest, in the room, is that the conversation is going to be about us. It'll it'll go off when we're talking about a specific subject, because then you, then it's like Filipino Americans in the context of nursing or in the context of being parents, or in the context of discipline. In the last mini episode, it's called Palo. We talk about like discipline and our experiences, and then we talk about like different. It reminds me of Russell Peters when he talks about how in his comedy how he told his dad like he's gonna call like Child Protective Services. Like Joe had an experience like that, and he relayed that story, and it's an understanding amongst us where we don't have to tell each other like, if you did that, that's like the white way of doing things. Like we all, it's just known. It's like, that's not how we do things. This is how Filipino immigrant parents raise their children. And it's not to make light of like child abuse, even though in the episode we talk a lot of like, we're laughing the whole time, but it's because we're recounting like what our experiences were and how, I believe if we were to go super serious and go dark, that would be like a main episode. But it was about, it was a mini for that reason, because we wanted to know, like, Joe was really curious, like, how would you raise your children? And because the three of us don't have, or the four of us don't have kids, it's a real question, and it's a good conversation, and it was entertaining for the 45 minutes that we gave you all.
And again, yeah, I do want to point that out for people when they're checking out your episodes and everything like that, that we can't really give the description justice this way, like, you know, in just like summarizing. So because it is really actually pretty complex, like to, of course, not make light of child abuse, but that there are certain practices or just the way of raising children that's very specific to Filipino families.
Like the belt and slipper is a legitimate question that we've all heard, and it's one that can incite fear because it's the fear of being in trouble, but it's not the fear of being hit, surprisingly enough. It's the fear of being in trouble. Okay, maybe it is a little bit the fear of being hit by your parents, but that's just the context, right? Of like, and that's a universal Filipino trait, it seems. Filipino American trait.
We're going to take a short break so that we can get to talking about your personal projects that aren't collaborative. Well, it's probably collaborative because it's creative, but I did want to give enough airtime for that too. So we'll take this small break. I know you're going to know this song, so you're going to stay on the phone with us, Elaine, but we're just going to play a little throwback to the 90s with the Panay group, the song Next Time.
I had to tell.
And we're back. This is Bread and Roses, and we're back with Elaine Dulalas. Oh my God, please tell me I got it right then.
Yeah, that was fine.
That's
great.
Oh no! Cheryl had some more questions about, we were going to talk about, Cheryl is in the world of filmmaking also.
Yeah.
And so you have a documentary. That we wanted to talk about.
I'm developing a documentary right now. It's about Filipino-American girls and how they dominate the sport of short flag. And for folks who don't know what short flag is, it's in that cheer and spirit field. And short flags are smaller flags. Like there's color guard, which are tall flags, which are the big giant flags that you see in like the Rose Parade or in like college football, and then or football general. And then short flag is like region lock specific apparently to Southern California. And at competitions at USA Nationals, the teams that always win, or for the past like since the 90s, so over 20 years, are predominantly Filipino American squads. And specifically two regions, a high school in Oxnard, California, and several high schools in the South Bay, Carson, Long Beach area. So I am fascinated that no one's ever talked about this. Filipino Americans who are a part of short flags, they're like, yeah, that's just normal. And I'm coming from a background where I didn't have that short flag teams at my school in high school. I had no idea. I had no clue. Filipino Americans in my high school did drill, so a dance team, and they competed in that. And so when I heard about that this is happening, that there's a dynasty, I was like, there should be a movie made about this. There should be like a 30 for 30 style documentary about how these high school girls do stunts, throw flags, and they are super rigorous about it. And then I want to talk about later on, like the transition from how like short flags, like I already can see the image in my mind that like it would pair up with like Binta or Cinquil Princess, like with the fans. It's like all the similar nature. And like, why is it what is it culturally that causes Filipino Americans to dominate in that sport? So it's fascinating, and I've only started. And as documentaries go, it's probably going to take me a while, but I'm very excited.
It does take a while. I can confirm that. I'm always wanting to ask filmmakers this. What, I mean, you so clearly articulated your interest in this topic, but what was it that made you go, yep, I'm the one. I'm going to make the film.
So I was talking to my partner, ECL, about this, and we were talking, like, we're saying someone should make this. Somebody should do this. And Ezeal and I had been volunteers for the Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival for several years. It's going on actually right now. I was a features programmer for years, so I screened a lot of Asian American and Asian films. And so we'd always be like, there should be a film about this, and we wish somebody would do that. And over drinks, we're like, why don't we do it? Like, why are we waiting for somebody to do this? Why do we need to pitch it? Like, we've already pitched it to ourselves. And then from that moment on, we were like, okay, we're going to outline this. This is going to be our story. We can start here. We did, like, some shooting at FPAC, the Festival of Philippine Arts and Culture, and, like, it was just beautiful because, like, we were surrounded by our fellow Filipinos. And then we were talking, shooting about short flags, and then people would come up and be like, oh, I know that, I did that. And then it was just like serendipitous that all of it came together.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'm glad you just took charge and just decided, yeah, we'll just do this so it gets done.
Yeah, because if we don't tell our stories, who will, right? So It's kind of like the podcast. If we don't tell our stories, who will?
And especially speaking of the podcast, we barely have any time to ask about, but this is the one that, you can always come on back on Bread and Roses and talk more about this, because frankly, I would love to do one whole episode with you on this. Please tell us about the Babysitter's Club podcast.
Oh, so a long time ago, I had this idea for a show called Oblivious Nerd Girl, Great Idea. And it was based on the Babysitter's Club's books by Anne M. Martin. I read all of them as a child. I devoured all of them. And I was like, ooh, this is a project where I could reread them. And then I would talk about them, like be snarky about it and be like, why is Christy so mean? And, oh, Claudia Kishi is my hero. I want to rock a side ponytail and eat candy. And like Stacy and her diabetes, like that is so serious for an 11-year-old to read about. Like I was so shocked. And Marianne with her like overprotective father, totally relate. And Dawn with her California girlness. Like I basically recounted every character, almost all the characters. And so I would read the book, talk about it, and then be like, why did I love it so much? And I got maybe like 4 books in. And then I just like lost steam because I was talking about it by myself. I think if I had guests, I probably could have done it. But I didn't know what I was doing at the time. And the sound quality of this episode is probably terrible. But it was a fun labor of love for me.
And we're almost right there. So where else can everyone find your projects online?
This Filipino American Life, that's all at thisfilipinoamericanlife.com. And for my random blogs and essays and updates, I'm at obliviousnerdgirl.com. So that's, I wish I could spell.
O-B-L-I-V-I-O-U.
I'm like, I'm sure people can figure that one out. It's all the same. And all of our social media and whatnot for This Filipino American Life is on our website. So you can check us out. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We like to post a lot of Filipino-American memes or Filipino memes, so it's fun. We like to have fun.
And I'm definitely having you stay on right now for us because right up until the very end, I hope that you're still listening, Elaine, because the song that we're going to go out on, I hope you also, it's, you know, a certain generation knows this, so that's why it's going to be special. Pretty much, I mean, this is such a great treat. Cheryl is going to take us out.
Yeah, thanks so much for being on the show. And you have been listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland. Thank you so much for listening. And many thanks again to our engineer, Adam, and our evening public affairs director, Zelos Marchant. We always welcome new collective members. And if you're interested in joining us as a producer, a host, engineer, no experience necessary, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator at volunteer@kboo.org. You can connect with us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/breadandroses. There you can access our podcasts and share feedback or show ideas. Like us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses, and we are on Twitter, @BreadRosesRadio. And we are going to go out on an oldie but goodie, I'm sure. Jocelyn Enriquez's big 90s club hit, Do You Miss Me? Thanks, everyone, for listening.